lieben Klaus und Loben.
Talking sports in the afternoon. This is the Big Show on Sportsnet 960 The Fan.
Basically, one of my fondest memories of Labor Day is we had lost the West Final in 1993. We had won the Grey Cup in 92. We hosted the West Final in 1993, and we were hosting the Grey Cup. And Doug Flutie was our quarterback, and we were highly ranked to really romp over the Eskimos. But that morning, a blizzard hit. And everything froze up. The snow was unbelievable. The heaters froze. Doug Flutie's hands froze. And we lost the 93 West Final. The Eskimos came into Calgary and won the Grey Cup. So we thought, what can we do for next year's Labor Day? That was the next rematch with the Eskimos. And we kind of started thinking. And as a kid, I used to get Sports Illustrated. And Sports Illustrated was my Bible as a kid. Wait for it every week to come in. And I remember reading an article. It was the University of Notre Dame, the Fighting Irish, and they were ranked in the top 10. Maybe they were ranked 10th, and they were playing USC Trojans, who were ranked number one. And the Irish had always worn green jerseys, but they did away with the green jerseys for about 35 years. And they warmed up in their royal blue or whatever that other color jersey is of the Fighting Irish. They went into the locker room, and the green jerseys were hanging up. And they came out and they romped over USC, who was ranked number one. So at the time, there was really no third jerseys in any sports.
Yeah.
And growing up, I was a big Oakland Raider fan.
Yeah.
So I thought, you know what? Let's do a black jersey. And we talked to the jersey company. I believe it was Starter at that time. And it was all secret. Mm-hmm. We had a very flamboyant owner who liked to take risks. So. Yeah. We put together this black uniform, and on the arm patches, we did 2-6 guns crossing because we were the West. We were the Wild West, and we had the white horse, and we put in a Latin phrase, quid quid rictamor, which states whatever it takes.
Yeah.
So we were going to win that Labor Day, and we were not going to lose for the Eskimos for a long time. So whatever it took. So we ordered these black jerseys. The league didn't know about it. CBC TV didn't know about it. The players didn't know about it. The players went out and they warmed up in their red jerseys. We actually brought Doug Flutie in the morning. We said, Doug, what do you think? He said, oh, let's do it.
Yeah.
So George Hopkins, our equipment manager, was a little nervous because the offensive linemen, they get their jerseys on with their pads. And it's quite a struggle to get their shoulder pads off.
Yeah,
and you only have so much time after warmups to the introduction of the players. So what happened? The team warmed up in their reds, and we hung up all the black jerseys in their locker room stalls, and they came in, and it was like kids on Christmas morning.
Yeah.
They couldn't get their red jerseys off fast enough. They put these black jerseys on. They came out for the introductions, and the crowd didn't know to cheer or what to do because they're like, where's our St. Peters?
Yeah, what's going on?
And the Eskimos, the look on their face was, what? And the game was 48-15 for the Stampeders, so it was a statement game.
Yeah,
I'm getting phone calls at the start of the game from the commissioner of the CFL. I'm getting phone calls from CBC. They took all the warm-up shots of the players in their red jerseys. They're going, this is going to screw up our production and everything like this. But it was just, it was something magical that day that just really happened. And we ended up, we went 9-0 in those black jerseys until we finally lost. And we only pulled them out on really special occasions. And every once in a while we did the warm up in the reds and come out in the black. And it just, football is such a mental game.
Yeah.
90% mental, and the other 10% you play from your head up. So figure that one out. But it just gave the players, they thought they were invincible.
Yeah.
And, it was amazing. So that's probably my biggest Labor Day highlight.
Ron Rook, who was on just a little while ago with our Josh Humphreys, with a memory from 1994 of Labor Day. And, of course, Ron, for so many years, Mr. Everything with the Stampeders. He was the, and remains to this day, one of the best media relations people that I have ever dealt with. For a short term, was the president of the Calgary Stampeders, but had a long relationship with the Red and White. And what a Labor Day memory that was. And you know, Josh, for many of us, we take a lot of what was talked about there for granted. Mm-hmm. We take the third jerseys, the different colors, kind of that, you know, that new look, that different look for granted. And I don't, you know, Ron said right in the story, he had seen somebody else do it. He saw Notre Dame do it. But it, just the manner in which he did it and getting to know Ron, Ron would take and did take a lot of pride in keeping that one under wraps.
Yeah.
Took a lot of pride in kind of unleashing that on everybody, the broadcasters, the fans, the opposition. And to me, as we head into Labor Day weekend with a classic, the table is set for a classic on Monday. What a great story to kind of, I don't know, kind of get the red and white juices flowing, kind of get a little of that Stampeder pride going heading into the weekend.
Yeah, and it gives you a great feeling because, you know, same sort of thing is going to happen. It's not as hidden or obviously as that was, but the new signature jerseys are going to come out this season as well. But that's such a great story to know how, you know, behind the league's back, behind everybody's back, he comes out and does that jersey. The players don't know. And I know there's a lot of people, and I we had this argument, and Pat was on, and I can't remember who was with us too, but we had this argument about third jerseys and what they do for teams.
Yeah.
And if you don't think a new jersey or something like that debut can boost the morale of a team, listen to that story right there. When you walk into the room and see a brand new jersey or a third jersey or something hanging up, it can boost the morale of a team, as you can clearly tell.
Well, I'll tell you, I've seen the opposite, too. I go back to 2000, and I guess it would have been 2005 in Kelowna. The NHL lockout ends, and the National Hockey League lets players go to the Olympics. So Team Canada has a Olympic orientation camp in Kelowna. So we haven't, you know, we missed a whole year of hockey. Mm-hmm. We're getting all these NHL players back on the ice for the first time. And Nike's going to debut this brand new jersey, this new, and the problem, they were going to play it and use it in the game, in the inter-squad game, and guys were changing the jerseys and taking it off. I mean, look, that's a sizing issue.
Yeah.
But you can't tell me those guys that in Los Angeles that wore the face card third jersey for the LA Kings.
The Burger King.
Exactly, it was called
the Burger King.
Yeah, and I mean, again, I'm the wrong guy when it comes to fashion to be having these conversations. But, you know, the Islanders in that pumpkin jersey, you know, or the Islanders, even when they made they went to Captain Highlighter. You know, they had the lighthouse and the captain on the front of it. You're right.
Absolutely.
And something like that where...
But when they're nice like that and the players love them, you come out in the field and you're pumped and ready to go.
But even the other part of it is kind of the whole, you know, you're going out for practice. You have no idea. You come back in and then, wow. Look at those things.
Yeah.
They look great. We didn't know. Yeah, I mean, there's a little something there. Absolutely there is. And you could never get away with that again.
You never get away with it, not only doing right behind the league's back and everything, but... social media, and Ron mentioned it later on in that interview. He mentioned social media. There's no way those would leak.
Yeah.
There's no possible way you could ever. I mean, somebody somewhere would tell a friend who would tell a friend, even within the Stampeders organization, it would get out that they're planning to do this with, you know, social media these days. So that is something that is pretty special. That's a great story. And as far as, you know, I can remember and Ron can remember, no one really had the third jersey concept in pro sports until that point. I mean, there was, you know, times where they wore jerseys on special occasions.
Yeah.
But nobody had a regular third jersey, really.
No, that would be right about the time.
Right about one of the first.
That'd be right about the right time. I said it yesterday, and I'll stand by it. I think there was, you know, a lot of minor pro teams would have had different variations. I remember, you know, kind of related to this, when I was in Estevan with the Bruins in the Saskatchewan Junior Hockey League, you know, towards the, I guess it would have been the middle of the 3 years I was there, you know, it was such a trend in hockey that we, you know, we had to do one. And I remember because we were a kind of a board run team, we had an executive and they were all volunteers and stuff
I
mean, it was pulling teeth and pulling hair to do this because of all the, you know, kind of the older people, the old guard that knew the, you know, the you know, saw the team go over, you know, to New Westminster and then brought them back in the SJHL and had been around and hadn't played with helmets and didn't wear masks when they were goalies. You know, they really struggled with that.
Yeah.
And I remember that, you know, and this is off the top of my head, I think we basically just ripped off the Bruins teddy bear one and the one we did in Estevan.
Yeah.
Something similar to that. But it was, now we're talking late 90s, right?
Yeah.
So it's right in that, 94 yeah. would have put it right in that wheelhouse.
Yeah, and I mean, there's probably a lot of teams who came out with a jersey and they used it on one time and sure. then retired it or something. You know, wore sure. a vintage, wore a classic, wore a special jersey on a one-time occasion. But yeah. this is the one that, you know, we have three different uniforms to choose from for a game.
Yeah.
When we're at home or whatever, we have two different uniforms to choose. We have a red or a black one. This is the one that kind of stayed in circulation, one of the very first.
Have you watched kind of a long, jump from there? But here we are talking about the ability, to kind of be innovative, the ability to take a few risks with something.
Mm-hmm.
And that really came, mid-90s. That's, we're talking about 20 years ago. Have you seen the reality show on AMC, Fourth and Loud? The reality show on no. the LA Kiss, the Arena Football League team owned by Paul Stanley and Gene Simmons.
No, I have not yet.
I don't like it. I don't like the show because it's typical reality television. Yeah. They shoot the guy not saying anything and they go to break, leave you hanging about,
he said something.
I wonder
yeah.
if he did fill that water bottle. We'll come back and find out.
Yeah.
But, that was the whole thing with, Paul and Gene from Kiss. They wanted to do something that was... they wanted to do something that was so different. The helmet, the jerseys were, if you've seen them, they're pretty radical. And now the Arena Football League's minor pro. But, thanks to a guy like Ron, and, thanks to, his ability to do this and kind of unveil it and have some success, I absolutely, they opened the door.
Yeah.
Brother whether James. Or not they're the originators or whatever, somebody had to go through it and somebody had to try it. And you can bet once they did it in Calgary, everybody else in the CFL kind of fell in suit, right? And mm-hmm. fell in line and elsewhere. And, I'm sure the NHL teams will tell you, no, we came up with it first or whatever, Major Everything League Baseball.
Yeah. I think it was 95 when, the Burger King and the Darkwing Duck from the Anaheim one,
right.
the duck coming out of the ice.
Yeah, I think that.
Pittsburgh and Boston. That was all the same year. They had a handful.
Right, and that was the MO of Disney, right? Disney came to the National Hockey League, and they wanted to, bring some jazz to it. And it's funny because you say, well, it's only 20 years ago. It feels like a long time. But it's taken a long time to kind of, mm-hmm. Get to build up the acceptance to with social media now, very little of whatever gets announced or whatever gets introduced gets universally loved, right?
Yeah.
There's always going to be people who hate it. Now with the video games, wasn't the Flames third jersey originally leaked on EA Sports? Didn't they have
last
screenshots
year, yeah.
and stuff like that?
And when they did the RBK unveil of whatever year, I think it was 07 or 08, everybody's jersey because they just didn't realize it
right.
released.
Right. Yeah. So
but now they have the thing where you have to type in a code once the jersey gets released, then you can.
Yeah.
Play
yeah.
With
so it's funny how
the world changes.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
The ground has changed. And again, hats off to Ron and hats off for the Stampeders to doing it. It's a fabulous, fabulous Labor Day memory. I did Edmonton radio last night, and I told you I was going to go on I didn't do a good job.
No.
You didn't
rile them up?
No, you know why? Because they're excited. Because Absolutely. Up in Edmonton, they're excited. And
they should be.
Yeah, they should be. And, I guess maybe there's, for me, it's kind of that, step back. Well, we could have some fun here, but on the same token, there is some satisfaction that the neighbors are bought into it. There's
yes.
so often in this
yep.
league, a game might come along and, the Rider fans are always more invested, it seems, than anybody else in everything. So sometimes you don't have that equality of both sides. Not all the time, but, sometimes that happens early on in the season, versus late in the season. Right from July in that first meeting, there seemed to be an appetite from the Eskimo fans. Like, that's Calgary. That's our measuring stick.
Yeah.
And, going back, even last night on with Ree Wilkins, and it's funny because that whole fake punt, before the first half still resonates up there. And, Reed was, I can't believe they did it. I'm still, mad that they did it and everything. And I'm from the other school. I'm going, no, dude, I think that did more for the Edmonton Eskimos than anything has. They have not lost since that game to Calgary. I think you can make a case that the Edmonton Eskimos have looked more thorough in their victories to this point, that they have had, better games. Calgary's won, they lost one since then, but, Calgary's only up 11-7 to Ottawa, then they do it.
Yeah.
As I was trying to explain to them, and I think it's a fair statement to make to our audience, I still feel like there's more for the Stampeders, much more to give. I'm not sure if the Eskimos have that much more to improve or that much more to give. I'm sure they would tell you that.
Yeah.
But now with Mo Price coming back, with John Cornish back in the lineup, you know, hitting Labor Day, you know, Bo Levi Mitchell's had, you know, 8 games now under his belt. I still look at the Calgary Stampeders and go, I think there's more to give. I think they can be more dominant than they've been to this point.
Absolutely. When I look at it, the Eskimos have by far been the more complete team this year. They've been a complete team.
Sure.
You look like what you've seen from the Eskimos, that's what you're going to get. They're a complete team.
Right.
When I see the Stampeders, I don't think we've seen what the Stampeders can give. A, they haven't been 100% healthy.
Seen flashes.
You see flashes of it.
And I think it's more the offense. Quite honestly, I think
it is the offense. The defense is the best defense in the league.
Right. Special teams has been really good.
Yep.
And again, what you take the most outstanding player out of your lineup for 7 games.
Yeah.
You know, you take Mo Price out of the lineup
because he hasn't been back since week one.
You had a revolving door at running back. You had ratio issues as a result of that.
A rookie starter. Right.
So this isn't a case of me crossing my arms going, "Hoomph, impress me." It's just I really do believe that they have more to give. There's another gear for the offense.
I have been impressed with the offense because they're running on not a skeleton crew, but a crew that's...
Well, they made it work. They made it work.
And they're winning games. They're 7-1, so I'm very impressed with what they've done.
Yeah.
But now we're getting healthier. Jeff Fuller going to be out of the lineup long term.
That hurts.
But yeah, you're getting Joe West, which is still incredible that he's going to probably play on Monday.
Right.
You've got Mo Price coming back. Nick Lewis is back, so all your threats are there. John Cornish is back. Now we can finally maybe see what can this offense do now that we're as close as we've been to 100% healthy since the first half. It was the first half against Montreal when Mo Price went down. And then the injuries just snowball from there. Then John Cornish in the second half, and then week 2, 3, so on. So I'm really, really looking forward to what we can do. This is the healthiest the Stampeders offense has been since week 1.
As we sit in our brand new downtown studios with windows, we can tell you that it is raining.
What I able to do that.
What I am happy to do is to tell you 5 days from now, it looks like overcast, cloudy, but 17 degrees. So comfortable. Mm-hmm. You know, I think some people would like to bake. There doesn't appear to be any precipitation in the forecast. That's good.
That's good.
Comfortable game. Get it on. You're going to play 2. I know a lot of people were at Mugshots yesterday, and we had a lot of people coming in to try the wings, and I had a conversation with a number of them about the football game. And, you know, I get the sense from Stampeder fans they're respectful right now of the Eskimos. They're respectful of what Mike Riley and that offense does. I get the sense after doing one hit on Edmonton radio that the Eskimos are still, or at least their fans, their broadcasters, are still looking at this as a measuring stick game.
Yeah.
What a great setup. Now if we can just get the war words. Now if we can just get somebody. You know, if we could just get Chris Jones and Huffnagel to tell us what they really think
of each other,
right?
Or if an Odell Willis can come out with some bullet, say something.
Yeah, absolutely.
It was him last game who said he's going to come right in there after Bo Levi or things. You know, we just need that one thing. And, hey, practices just got underway today for both these teams. They're just back on the practice field now.
Right.
So perhaps we will hear that coming in the next couple of days, either today or tomorrow or Saturday, Sunday, because there's still a few more days of practice because it's the Monday game.
Absolutely. We got a jam-packed program for you today. Coming up a little later this hour, Chris Snow from the Calgary Flames. I'm calling it the Summer of Analytics. We have certainly seen hockey, the business of hockey, the game of hockey, the NHL level of hockey, embrace analytics this summer wholeheartedly. Everybody's willing to have those conversations. Everybody's listening now. Well, Chris Snow's been doing this for a while, and not just for the Calgary Flames. Prior to that, he did it for the Minnesota Wild. I want to pick his brain where he sees this going. Is it as big a deal as the media is making it out to be? We had Stephen Birch on earlier this week from Sportsnet. He's one of the new writers and contributors there. He's doing things on an analytical bent. Jonathan Willis now writing for Sportsnet. So I'll call him from him today. Another analytical bent. I spoke briefly at the analytics conference up in Edmonton in May, and I said, you know, guys, really just keep doing what you're doing, because eventually the media is going to glom onto you, because we're not smart enough to do it on our own.
Yeah.
We're gonna come to you guys and go, help us out. What do we need to know?
Yeah.
And I think it's a really interesting summer for that. Also coming up later on, Chris Johnston from Sportsnet, not analytical, but he's editorial, and he has a thought or two on expansion, I want to kind of dive into something that was said by a broadcaster that I have the utmost esteem for. As a matter of fact, maybe we'll do that after the break. Later on in studio, looking forward to this, Sheldon Kennedy and Blake Richards, they've got an event coming up in Airdrie on the 7th. Of course, Sheldon Kennedy, the former Flame, and Blake Richards just happens to be the member of Parliament for Wildrose. So they're going to be in studio. Sven Berchi is going to join us. There's apparently an announcement coming up at the top of the hour. So we got a jam-packed program this afternoon. However, want to take a moment to let you know that tomorrow, Josh and I and our friend Bruce Dobigan, our friend Brucey is going to join us. We're going to be live tomorrow at Canyon Meadows Golf and Country Club. It's the Shaw Charity Golf Classic. They're not going to be digging the weather today, but it looks like they'll be able to enjoy the weather tomorrow. Looking forward to that. I don't know if you guys caught it. Steve Elkington was on this morning with Boomer. We've got to find some room to play that conversation.
We will,
because he was absolutely terrific. The legends of golf, Tom Lehman, Marco Mira, Hale Irwin, the defending champion, Rocco Mediate, is back. It's a great field. The purse is $2.25 million. Now, this field will combine to raise significant money for youth-based charities in southern Alberta, including Youth Link, Calgary Police Interpretive Center, and Hull Services. For more information, you can check it out, ShawCharityClassic.com. More coming up this afternoon, Sportsnet 960, The Fan.
Proud home for the Flames and Hitmen, Calgary's hockey station, Sportsnet 960, The Fan. Talking sports in the afternoon, this is The Big Show on Sportsnet 960, The Fan.
Put him on the practice roster. You know, Quincy's a man that made a serious mistake, and I had a lengthy discussion with him. I know he's generally remorseful for his actions, but I also believe he's deserving of a second chance.
Quincy Butler, practice roster for the Calgary Stampeders. Last week, he pled guilty to a charge of assault causing bodily harm and was placed on 18 months probation. Of course, this all stems back to an incident prior to training camp. At that time, the Stampeders releasing Quincy Butler, but left the door open, said they would revisit it. John Huffnagel, talking to the media today, met with him, believes that he has changed, is willing to give him a second chance. The background of Butler, joined the Stampeders in 2011, has played 16 games over the last 3 years, 42 tackles, 3 special teams tackles, 2 interceptions, 2 fumble recoveries, 1 forced fumble. Has made 3 playoff appearances, 14 tackles, and 1 interception there. I'm not surprised that Quincy Butler is back. I felt all along that Quincy Butler would come back as long as the law allowed it, which clearly it does. Do you have an issue with second chances?
Absolutely not.
Okay.
Everybody makes mistakes.
Okay.
You know, some bigger than others, but everybody makes mistakes, and everybody has the chance, you know, to come back and make good on those mistakes.
Quincy Butler's a useful football player.
Yeah, absolutely. And this is not a move. I mean, Quincy Butler is a guy who can help this team, and an already strong defense can get help by him being in the lineup.
The Calgary Stampeders added Josh Gordon to their neg list apparently overnight. Who is Josh Gordon? Well, he is the Cleveland Browns receiver who has been suspended by the NFL for the full season.
Yep.
It was a marijuana possession. He was charged with marijuana possession.
Yes.
The league threw the book at him. He yesterday, through the media, expressed an interest in perhaps exploring his options north of the border to play football. Calgary jumped at the opportunity to place him on their neg list. But Mary Kay Cabot of the Cleveland Plain Dealer said during Pro Football Talk Live, the Browns won't give Gordon permission to play in Canada. Now, the ruling on this is, under the CFL rules, a player who's suspended by the NFL is not eligible to play in Canada. However, if the Browns had released Gordon, he would no longer be under contract in the NFL and would be able to sign with the Stampeders. So that doesn't look like it's going to happen. Do you have a problem with that? Do you have a problem with – this is kind of the Ricky Williams. The ruling in the CFL now is based on essentially the Ricky Williams situation a couple years ago. Suspended in the NFL, came north, played for the Argonauts, kind of rehabbed his career, rehabbed his image, went back to the NFL. Any problem with that?
for Josh Gordon, this isn't the first time he's been suspended, though. He was suspended back in 2013 as well, as part of the substance abuse policy. So he's a second-time offender. So I know there's a lot of people that are looking at it. Comes back to the argument about, well, Ray Rice only gets two games now. Josh Gordon gets this.
No,
this is a second offense, which is one part of the argument. But as far as, like, why would the Cleveland Browns release him to come to the... He's still under contract. Even when he gets back from a suspension, he's still under contract with that team. So he's a pretty good player that you would risk injury coming up here. So I don't have a problem with not being able to come up here. Well, that player's still under contract. I don't think there's any need for a player to have to come up here.
Do you have a problem with the Stampeders, you know, putting a player like this on their neg list?
Oh, absolutely not. It's a talented player. Again, it goes back to the...
But it's a talented player who's currently suspended for violating the rules. Yeah, but violating rules. I mean, you got to stand for something, don't you?
I understand that, but what are you looking for to do if you're the Calgary Stampeders? If you can bring Josh Gordon, it helps you win a Grey Cup, especially with the Riders adding Weston Dressler. Their receiving core is getting better.
Yep.
You've got to keep up with them in the West.
Yeah.
So you want to, you know, what do you want more? Do you want to win a Grey Cup more?
You turn over rocks, you do whatever it takes. You win at all costs.
Same thing as what I'm not saying the same thing the Flames do, but the same things Flames would do. You find wherever you can get players to come into an organization. I look at it from a few years ago when they signed Todd Bertuzzi. He had the big checkered pass. It was controversy bringing him in, but they thought he could help the team out.
Yep.
Can you really base on a guy's past? Can you hold him down because of what he's done in the past? I would do your due diligence with Josh Gordon for sure. I would take a long time, kind of like we saw Brad Tree Living, Devin Setoguchi, meet with the player, talk with him, get to know, is this guy truly remorseful for that? Do you believe he's remorseful? Do you believe he's a changed guy? Like Quincy Butler, you met with him, you know he changed and he deserves that second chance. Well, does Josh Gordon?
Let me explain my position just a little bit because I'm not naive. And I'm not picking on the Calgary Stampeders or anybody, because if the Stampeders didn't put a claim in, somebody else would have. Nine teams would have lined up to put him on the neg list. That I get. I just often wonder about these types of questions. I wonder aloud about these questions. I think, you know, they're almost those ethical questions. I don't think there's a right answer. I don't think there's a wrong answer. I found it somewhat unique that on a day in which the Stampeders have allowed, you know, Quincy Butler to come back, right? We cut you. You crossed the line. You got in trouble. You have now, you know, in the process of paying your penance to the, you know, to the province or the country, society, right? You are eligible. Okay, we'll bring you back to the practice roster. The same day, here you've got another issue with a player who suspended south of the border, and you're bringing him. Does anybody look at that? Does anybody look at that crooked? Does anybody think? I get it. It's a business. Yeah. I understand it's a business. I think there's a difference between giving someone a second chance and finagling a rule.
Exactly, yeah.
We
don't know. Maybe he was put on the neg list just to prevent other teams from doing it and grabbing him. Maybe that was the entire intent. Maybe there was no intent to be bringing Josh Gordon here. Maybe they wanted him on that list, but also, you know, if there was intent, sure, they probably would have talked to him and got to know him a little bit.
Sure.
Or maybe it was just, we don't want anyone else to get him. We don't want anyone else to get better, so let's put him on ours.
And it's not a condemnation of the Stampeders. It's nothing more than asking a question. Yeah. And it's just a coincidence today because you had kind of two things going on at the same time that are separate, that are different. The circumstances are different, but it's about, you know, these, you know, players that have been in trouble.
Yeah.
Players are in trouble. And I'm all for giving. Look, I can't think of a better example of, you know, than Brian McGrattan as a player who got a second chance.
Exactly.
And he is making the most of it. And I don't know if people, I've tweeted it a couple of times. Brian this week spent time speaking to NHL rookies at their forum. He's been doing a lot of things. This is a guy that goes into the community and, you know, and is making the community better. And I'm not trying to put anything in front of these two young men.
Mm-hmm.
I'm just saying I thought it was a little interesting today that one team had two different players that are somewhat in trouble or have these issues.
Yeah.
And do you know, is there a second thought about this? Is it just football, win at all costs? You know, where do you – look, they're grown men.
Yeah.
And – as long as they come to work for you and represent your company and you're satisfied with that, it's good enough. And I hope nobody takes this as an interpretation of the a condemnation of the Calgary Stampeders. Simply a question.
Yeah.
And I just thought one of the only days we'd ever be able to ask it, Josh.
Exactly.
Because it happened today.
Yeah. I mean, if Stampeders didn't do it, like you said, somebody else would have. Eight other teams across the league would have done the same thing to get the opportunity, whether it was to keep them off somebody else's roster or to the, with the intent of adding him to their roster. I mean, I think they just did their – and again, I think if they ever would have been able to bring Josh Gordon here, if it ever got to that point where he might be part of this team, I'm sure the Stampeders or that would be Huffnagel or somebody would go down on a day off and talk to this guy and really get to know him before they make that, because this is a big move. You don't want to bring him in here and then have a problem.
My personal moral compass, I would have a problem with a player suspended in another league coming here to work.
Yeah, that's where it gets – I mean, for me too. I mean, you get suspended in another league and then you just go. I mean, it's the same sort of thing if a guy got suspended in the NHL and he just went to – you know, over to Europe to play a year or whatever.
I mean, I gather that, you know, if this was one we opened up on or took phone calls or texts, there'd be a lot of people that would be, you know, kind of going back and saying, well, Rob, what are we talking about here? We're talking about, you know, recreational drug use or whatever. I don't have a problem with it. I understand that. I'm just, to me, it's the fact that he's suspended. Yeah. At the time, I remember when Ricky Williams came here, I was a little bit younger and probably a little more naive. And, you know, he was kind of like, wow, Ricky Williams is going to come to the CFL. This is, you know, the CFL.
Oh, awesome.
You know, whether you agree with the punishment or not, there needs to be some respect for some of this, at least the in my opinion.
You'd be upsetting the NFL a lot.
Clearly the CFL feels that way, or they wouldn't have put a rule in.
They
put
that rule in, exactly. Yeah. So, I mean, you're definitely onto that. But, yeah, you would upset the NFL. That's a relationship I don't think you want, if you're the CFL, to start tampering with or, you know, getting down on as well, because I don't think they would be very happy. They obviously weren't very happy before, and they're not very happy, and that's why there's probably a rule in place about it.
Right. You mentioned the other, let's be perfectly honest, the really big news in the CFL. And again, Stampeders are involved in this too.
Mm-hmm.
Weston Dressler back with the Saskatchewan Rough Riders. Arash Madani of Sportsnet reporting late last night that the Stampeders entered the sweepstakes. He was reporting just under $200,000 was the offer from the Stampeders. We know that the Ottawa Red Blacks had the wherewithal, made an offer. We believe it was a big-time offer.
Yeah, the biggest of the
three. It was the biggest of the three?
It was the biggest of the three,
okay.
Yeah.
So he forgoes some money to go back to Saskatchewan.
Yes, and Rod Peterson saying that it was basically, despite the offers from other teams, Weston Dressler had pretty much made his decision on Tuesday night when he first cleared waivers that he was going back to Saskatchewan. That was the word from Weston.
So loyalty.
Loyalty. It was all along. This was, I mean, there was other teams with offers, and maybe he waited a little, just a day or two, just to see what other teams were interested. Sure. But for him, it was Saskatchewan back in the CFL. If he was coming to the CFL, it was Saskatchewan, and wanted to get the deal done today, signed so he could practice and play with the team, and he wants to be in the lineup on Sunday.
Yeah, you know, it has the ability to be a game changer at West.
Absolutely.
You know, he's
there's three powerhouses as far as I'm
well,
concerned.
Exactly.
And, if it wasn't already, it is now a three team.
Oh, I'll tell you, had he signed with Calgary, I think we'd be all crowing about it. We'd be like, wow, look at this. You know, Stampeders are going for it. And again, the Stampeders deserve credit for being in it.
Mm-hmm.
They, you know, say what you will, the ethical questions or whatever I'm raising, whatever coincidences are happening, fact of the matter is, on one level, you have to appreciate what the Calgary Stampeders have done in the last 24 to 48 hours.
Yeah.
They have done everything they can to try and improve an already good football club that's 7-1, already top of everybody's power rankings.
Yeah.
They're trying to get better, and for that, I'm appreciative.
Absolutely. They know that they're good. They're a confident team. They're confident in their ability, but they know there's room to improve, whether it's with the roster you have right now or if it's Sean Huffnagel. There's areas that we can improve by bringing guys into this team. And that's got to make you feel pretty good as a Stamps fan. Despite being 7-1 top spot, they're not satisfied.
Back-to-back Chris is coming up in the next couple, three segments. A little later on, Chris Johnston, one of the lead writers for Sportsnet, he's going to stop by talking about expansion. And again, Eric DeHatchuk wrote in the Globe and Mail today, And I really, in a lot of ways, I take a cue from Eric, because he's for a long time has been talking about Toronto, but also mentioning that there's really no news here. And I think Chris is on the same. I think everybody is really saying today there's no news. The NHL is going to expand. It's not breaking news. Although a very respected journalist, broadcaster, you might say, Dan Patrick today went on his program on the NBC Sports Network and said, done deals. They're going to be in Vegas next year. It could be Carolina. It could be Phoenix, which I thought was a little interesting. If we've got some time, we might play that clip later on. But when we come back, the Calgary Flames we go. The summer of analytics. The man that introduced me to this concept from a team level, Chris Snow of the Calgary Flames, will join us. Coming up next, Sportsnet 960, The Fan.
We are with Calgary sports fans through thick and thin. Here's hoping we have more thick than thin coming our way. Sportsnet 960. The Fan. Talking sports in the afternoon. This is the Big Show on Sportsnet 960. The Fan.
Coming up a little later on, we will be, well, talking a little more expansion. I took a little bit of a different twist today. Dan Patrick from the NBC Sports Network reporting that there will be a team in Las Vegas, and it could be an expansion team, or could be a relocation of Carolina and Phoenix. Chris Johnson from Sportsnet will join us coming up in the 3 o'clock hour. As well, later on, Sven Berchi from the Calgary Flames. We go down the Subway Restaurant Fresh Take Hotline. Coming up on Saturday, September 13th, Rob Volman of Hockey Abstract is hosting a analytics conference here in Calgary. He was part of hosting one up in Edmonton in May. It's growing exponentially. And actually, since that conference in May, I think the conversation about analytics in hockey has just taken off. We've seen many big hirings, particularly by the Toronto Maple Leafs, hiring quote-unquote bloggers or people that run websites, fan sites, if you will. But the whole idea of analytics is certainly gaining some steam this summer. That probably doesn't surprise our next guest, although I don't want to put words into his mouth. Director of Statistical and Video Analysis for the Calgary Flames, Chris Snow, joins us. Hello, Snowy.
Hey, Rob. How are you?
I'm good, buddy. What do you make, just as an observer, because this is what you do for a living and this is what you've done for a living for a long time. What do you make of this summer and almost the emergence, if you will, of you know, hockey analysis or hockey analytics and kind of into the mainstream, for the lack of a better term?
Yeah, I would say that this was probably inevitable and that we're probably traveling the same path in how this is emerging and finding a place inside of teams as they did in baseball over the past couple of decades, which was having people who were doing really good, what you might call public sphere analysis, writing on the web, blogging, and peer review, grading and changing those thoughts over time, and teams then taking notice of the fact that some of that work is pretty insightful and might actually be helpful to take off of the web, bring into your office, and utilize to inform your decision-making. Like in baseball, Bill James, who was, you know, well-known as the godfather, if you will, of baseball analysis of sabermetrics, he was publishing in the early 80s on the subject when he did finally get hired by a team, the local team near where he lived in Kansas. The Royals hired him, but wouldn't acknowledge and wouldn't allow him to say to anybody that he actually worked there. And it wasn't until he was hired by the Boston Red Sox years later at the urging of their owner that that became public. So I think that so much good work has been done out there, and teams, especially in a cap year, are looking for any competitive edge, that this was probably an inevitable thing, and it just so happened that this summer was a bit of a tipping point.
Inevitable, but why did it take so long? As you mentioned, I mean, when we're talking about Bill James, we're going back decades now to when that started. Mm-hmm. Why did it take hockey all of these years to finally come around to it?
Well, I think for a couple of reasons. One may be as simple as the data that you collect off our sport is so much more difficult to collect and so much more difficult to quality check that you need some, you know, you need mechanisms to collect that. You need ways to check it. You need people in place to do that. It's not as easy as looking at baseball and how segregated each pitch is,
right?
That you can quickly make some sense of it. I think as well, and this is the same in baseball as in hockey, there are two groups of people that would be pushing that hiring. One group would be at the general manager level, would recognize that value early on, and they go get it. And the other is at the owner level. And that's how Bill James got to the Boston Sox. That was an email from John Henry, the Red Sox owner, before Theo Epstein even worked there. Theo inherited him and was happy to do so. So I think that, you know, you probably see some GMs who years ago, you know, there were a few teams, and I think that we were one of those early teams that identified this need. I think, you know, speaking about the Flames, that was 3 years ago that they asked me to come here. And from that day forward, I've felt a real investment from, you know, the ownership down through Ken King, down through hockey operations, in decision or database decision making. But this is important. We need to be well-rounded in how we go about making decisions. And now I think you'll see a third and well more than a third to a half, and most teams have this position staffed, if not at a consultant level, full-time over the next few years.
Chris Snow is our guest down the Subway Restaurant Fresh Take Hotline, Director of Statistical and Video Analysis for the Calgary Flames. Chris, there seems to be, at least publicly, this stuff that the fans and the media are using seems to have uniformity. You know, we can all agree on Corsi and Fenwick. Within within hockey clubs, it's a little more different, team-centric, right? That kind of information isn't shared. You might have different information or keep different information or store information differently than, say, another team.
Right.
Is that right?
Right. That's right. Of course, he has gotten so much traction because at the team level, it's been proven to have a strong correlation to winning percentage. The challenge there is applying that to individual players and making sense of them and valuing them. The data that's available about hockey is still so small in relation to what's available. You know, I'll go back to baseball again.
Right.
Like the data that is being collected in single-A ballparks, the amount of it and the specificity of it is greater than what's being collected in the National Hockey League right now. So as we get better, it's going to be a byproduct of improved data, and that's going to be teams doing it themselves, and teams are definitely doing that right now.
Mm-hmm.
And that's going to be vendors that come along with solutions that teams say, yeah, that's going to help us get a lot better information about players and we should buy it. And in baseball, those companies and those vendors have been around for a long time. Like, we're just starting to get the last probably 3 to 4 years, essentially what you call data vendors.
Do you see your business or the business that you work in right now, is it always going to be proprietary? I mean, are the Calgary Flames always going to do your work differently than the Chicago Blackhawks, who do it differently than Tampa Bay? Do you know what I mean? Or do the teams eventually come together and share? I mean, there's certain statistics that everybody has, but I also understand you'll track something different than somebody else will.
Mm-hmm. Definitely. I think most of the baseball teams would, you know, to go back to them as the example, would be collecting or receiving, is a better word, receiving data from the same vendors, and then it's up to them to make better use of it. You know, to have better thinkers and innovators and people who are really good at taking abstract concepts and relating them to the actual performance of players and the team and getting some traction with the GM, with the scouting directors, with the coach.
Right.
And so I think that data and the quality of it is a huge step we need to make. And as we're making it, I think some teams will be ahead merely on that basis. But ultimately, you know, whether you're the most skilled computer programmer, most skilled mathematician, or your skill is experience in the game and an analytical mind, whoever's thinking about the game and the players in the right terms and then using that data properly will get an edge. Because you could give the same data to me, you, and 10 guys who are really sharp on the street, and we probably all come to different conclusions just because of the way our minds work and our experiences, you know, have shaped us.
Chris, is the analytics world that you live in, is it solely numbers? Because you also have the title of video analyst in there as well. What's the role of video in analytics?
I think it's very important, especially when you realize that some of these data points, the outcomes that you're judging players on, are so small. Or goals. The guy may score 22 goals in a year, and that's a high number compared to the rest of the players in the league. So it's always useful to go back to the video to see if it's confirming what the numbers are telling you, or whether maybe you stop and say, hey, these numbers are a bit misleading. Let's go back to the data and rethink this. And I think it's a pretty consistent back and forth that data points me to video, and then we utilize that. And video is a great illustrator of data too. If there's a concept that I've come up with and I want to relate that to people in our hockey group, the best way may be through video.
Chris Snow is our guest, the Director of Statistical and Video Analysis for the Calgary Flames, down the Subway Restaurant Fresh Take Hotline. We're kind of talking about this, as I call it, the summer of analytics. Chris, and I'm trying to be careful because I want you to talk more specifically about the field. Part of this is there needs to be acceptance, right? You can do your work, but if that work is then not accepted by coaches and by managers, you know, then it's all for naught. What's the acceptance rate like now as you talk to your, you know, your competitors or your compatriots around the league? Are coaches, are general managers, are people in hockey, I mean, they're saying the right things, but is this information actually being accepted and used now?
Yeah, that's a really good question, and I would say that you don't really know that answer until you sit there and you are part of that decision-making process with a team. So a team may hire a guy and not really utilize that function. A team may hire a guy and lean on him really hard. I think that the great part here in Calgary is that, you know, Brian Burke and Brad are both people who want as much information as possible in our decision making, and I think that's playing out in pushing our scouts to be better at how they do their jobs, to collect more information, to talk and think more about the game with each other, and, you know, pushing me to help inform that discussion even more. So I think it's, in our case, I think the strength is that it's part of a comprehensive process. It doesn't just sit off to the side. And I think that because of that, I get a lot of access and thoughts from the scouts that help me do better at what I'm doing. And hopefully once in a while, there are things I say that maybe shape the way that we're looking at players when we go scout them.
The media is talking about it. We're all talking about it. It's in the, you know, it's kind of in the conversation right now. Where's the next level? I understand the league's going to introduce some new statistical information, or at least the way that they collect it. Does this remain in its infancy, Chris, or are we in the golden age? How would you describe it?
Well, I think it's still in its infancy because I don't see it going away. And mm-hmm. I think that the data sources will continue to get better. And often when that information becomes public, that's when it really gets going, because you hear about it on TV, you read about it. And then every team wants to be where they perceive the teams that are already in that position to be. So I think that this will only expand. I think that the dialogue about the sport has improved so much the last couple of years because of all this blogging, because of the concepts. You know, we've been reading the last couple of weeks, and it was a, you know, front page, like number one story on TSN about a blogger in Carolina who's been collecting the data on every single puck leaving every team's defensive zone and every entry at the offensive blue line. And that data people are going to start writing about. And that's an easy, I think, concept to wrap our minds around, because there's a clear line on the ice of demarcation. The puck is crossing lines. That's something to collect that we won't argue about the methods. That data and the discussion around it will begin to shape our opinions about defensemen and forwards and how the game is played. So I think this will only evolve. And I think that the more that's written and spoken about, the more it will evolve, because that pushes all of us on the team side to be even better.
Chris Snow, our guest down the Subway Restaurant Fresh Take Hotline, Director of Statistical and Video Analysis for the Calgary Flames. To wrap up, when this stuff first started to percolate for me, you're the guy I went to, and I thought you always had some great advice, and I'd like you to share that advice with our listeners, because there are some who are right into it, Chris, absolutely. There's some who may be a little weary of it. What do people need to know about this information? I mean, as somebody once said to me, this is not about figuring out the score of the game without even playing it. It's, how do you view its use?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I would probably say this. You know, I've worked with a couple of teams over 8 years, and when anyone has real conviction about a player, when a scout has real conviction, my experience is that you need to listen to that, because there's a reason for that conviction, and they're usually right in those circumstances. Where the data has overriding, you know, proof in something a player is doing, I feel pretty confident in that being correct. I think when you're in that gray area, you know, and the scouts have a list, and we're talking about three or four players, and we've talked ourselves to a point where we feel that they're all pretty similar. I think the data can help us to contextualize each guy and pull them apart a little bit and just advance that discussion. It might not make the decision, but it gives us a better framework for that discussion, and we might feel better at the end of the discussion about what we're going to do.
Coming up on September 13th at the Dome, you are scheduled to be one of the presenters at the Analytics Conference. What are you going to talk about?
Well, I think I'm paired up with you.
Well, I'm the MC. I'm the MC. I'll drive it. But what do you want to do?
I know that you have analytics fever, so I'm not going to step on your toes too much.
Well, the first question I'm going to ask you is, how has analytics helped your cast?
My what?
Your cast. Your fly fishing coach just texted me and wanted to know how the numbers are helping your cast.
You know what? You know what? I almost fell out of the boat the last
time I fished because the guy I fished with fell out of the boat.
So
did you?
Yeah. I haven't been with you since then, so I'm starting to sense that was a one off.
We'll get you out. Listen, while I got you, thank you again. You were a part of the Sports Check Calgary Flames development camp this past weekend. You volunteered your time and helped out with some great kids. I hope you had a great time. I heard nothing but the kids were raving about you. They came back and they said, "I can't believe we had Corsi in yoga." And I said, "Hey, that's Chris. It's all good."
That's what you were saying. They thought I was just someone who was having more fun than they were. That wasn't volunteering. That was just really appreciating what you're doing and getting to have fun with some kids.
You're the man.
That was great.
We will talk soon. But, Chris, thanks for doing this. It's been really a very interesting summer, and I think a long time coming, as you say. It's been in baseball for a while. Here's hoping that we make some real headway here in the next couple of years with analytics and hockey.
Thank you. I'll see you on the 13th.
Yes, you will. There you go. Chris Snow, everybody, from the Calgary Flames, Director of Statistical and Video Analysis, joining us down the Subway restaurant, Fresh Take Hotline. Take a break. When we come back, big announcement around the corner as well. Chris Johnson from Sportsnet will join us around 325. Sportsnet 960, The Fan.
We talked to your boss. It's totally okay to stream Sportsnet 960 all day and night on your work computer. In fact, it's new company policy. Sportsnet.ca/960.